You're judged on what kind of commitment you want to make to the community. It's much more about what's in your heart.
Because it's a 1.5 mile by 4 mile long island, it's tiny, and we all have to work and play side by side.
His expertise as a protest tactician caught the attention of Martin Luther King Jr. Together, they planned the 1963 March on Washington.
These are hard times for closet cases.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canada's Commons repels a final attempt at marriage equality repeal. UK partnerships proliferate while Italy moves toward similar civilization. And Steve Pride unlocks Florida's key to happiness. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Charles Hall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 9th, 2006.
Yeas pour 123, nays contre 175, 175.
I declare the motion defeated.
More than 3 years after some of the country's provincial courts set in motion federal legislation to end discrimination against same-gender couples, Canada's gays and lesbians can finally rest easy. The country's House of Commons voted 175 to 123 on December 7th to reject a proposal by the minority Conservative Party government to revisit the contentious issue. The margin was greater than those on either side had expected, and larger than the 2005 vote in Parliament that established marriage equality. What appears to be the final nail in the coffin for opponents left LGBT rights advocates celebrating, and anti-queer groups accusing the minority Conservative government of betrayal. "We made a promise to have a free vote on this issue," said Prime Minister Stephen Harper, referring to his successful election campaign, "and we kept that promise," much to the displeasure of right-wing groups still fighting what they acknowledged was a losing battle. Harper called the vote decisive, saying, "I don't see reopening this question in the future." Among those voting against the motion were 5 members of Harper's own cabinet.
About 12,400 marriage licenses have been issued to same-gender couples in Canada since the province of Ontario became the first to legalize them in June 2003, according to Canadians for Equal Marriage. "With each passing month, more and more same-sex couples are getting married," said its national coordinator, Laurie Aaron. "In fact, gay and lesbian couples have been heading to the altar in Canada in unprecedented numbers, according to new statistics released this week. From the beginning of June through October, there was a jump of 23% in the number of same-gender couples obtaining marriage licenses. In Ontario, where over 6,500 same-gender couples have now wed, there was a 17% increase, and Quebec enjoyed a 35% increase during the same 5 months. But the biggest jump was in the country's most conservative province, Alberta, where the numbers increased by 40%.
Wedding fever has also swept the United Kingdom. The Office for National Statistics revealed this week that 15,672 civil partnerships have been contracted since December 2005, when they first became legal in the UK, through September 2006. While not calling it marriage, the Civil Partnership Act gives same-gender couples virtually the same rights as their heterosexually wed counterparts. 14,084 civil partnership ceremonies were held during the period in England, with London hosting about 25% of them. There were 942 in Scotland, 109 in Northern Ireland, and 537 in Wales. It was assumed there would be in the region of between 11,000 and 22,000 civil partnerships by the year 2010, a government spokesperson told reporters. So we are already past the midway point of that estimation in just 9 months of the Civil Partnership Act coming into force.
Italy's Senate this week passed a motion calling on the government of Prime Minister Romano Prodi to offer legislation creating civil unions for gay and lesbian couples by the end of January. The motion cited the growing debate within politics and public opinion concerning common law unions and the rights and duties stemming from them. The move came on the heels of a vote earlier in the week in the northern city of Padua to create a domestic partner registry for same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples, the first such action in any Italian municipality. The campaign platform of Prodi's leftist coalition last year included granting rights to same-gender couples. His diverse coalition ranges from communists who favor full marriage equality to Catholic-affiliated politicians who oppose any rights for gay and lesbian partners. Prodi himself opposes marriage and prefers civil unions. His government has reportedly been working on a bill that would be similar to Britain's civil partnership law that grants all the rights of marriage but not the name. But a draft bill has not yet been completed. Prodi's office issued a statement approving the January 31st deadline, however, saying the Senate vote represents a fundamental step forward. Pope Benedict XVI warned Prodi's government this week that the Vatican will use all of its power to thwart any move to legally recognize same-gender couples. Speaking at yet another Vatican conference on marriage and the family, Benedict yet again condemned same-gender unions, insisting that a marriage must be a union between a man and a woman and must be open to procreation.
South Australia's parliament caught up with the rest of that country's states and territories by passing a domestic partnership bill this week. The vote was an overwhelming 16-3. It will grant South Australia's same-gender couples many of the same rights as heterosexually married couples. Queer activists are confident that Governor Marjorie Jackson Nelson will sign the bill into law before the end of the year. South Australia's lobby for the rights of same-gender couples, Let's Get Equal, was relieved by the bill's passage after two previous attempts ended in failure, but said it was only the beginning of the journey toward full equality. Of course, there are still areas of the law where we aren't equal, the group said on its website, for example, with regard to adoption rights and reproductive rights. But it's a start.
A legislative committee in the U.S. state of New Jersey this week approved by a 4-2 vote a bill that would create civil unions, giving same-gender couples rights equivalent to heterosexual marriage, but refusing to call them that. An October state Supreme Court ruling ordered marriage equality for lesbian and gay couples, but left it to lawmakers to decide what to call such unions. According to a Reuters report, the New Jersey Assembly Judiciary Committee heard sometimes emotional testimony from all sides during a four-hour-long hearing. Steve McIntyre said he's been with his partner for 20 years and they want to be legally married. "He's not my roommate. He's not my partner. He's my husband," he told the panel. Stephen Goldstein, the chair of Garden State Equality, said the civil unions bill offers nothing that New Jersey gay and lesbian couples don't already have under the state's domestic partner law. He said the legislation is not even as comprehensive as Vermont's civil unions law, and that the 60 pages of paper used to print this bill is an assault on the trees killed. Even by the standards of a civil unions bill, it's still putrid. He accused lawmakers of trying to rush the bill through, even as equality advocates were mounting a major campaign across the state to generate support for full marriage rights.
The bill was also introduced in the New Jersey legislature this week to grant full marriage equality to gay and lesbian couples. Even though that measure appears to be going nowhere, its sponsor came out in the process. Democratic New Jersey Assemblyman Reed Guschiora, who becomes the first openly gay member of the New Jersey legislature, told a TV news show that, "I've just never made an issue of it. If someone asks me, I tell them. No one ever asked me publicly before." He believes that his constituents won't care that he's gay. "At least I hope so," he said. "New Jersey is a lot more tolerant than other states." But while a survey by the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute in Hamden, Connecticut, reported this week that 60% of New Jersey voters support a law allowing civil unions, half are against calling them marriage. According to most reports, the civil unions bill is expected to be approved in both houses of the state legislature by the end of the year.
And finally, the lesbian daughter of U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney is pregnant. Mary Cheney and her partner of 15 years, Heather Poe, are ecstatic about the baby, due in May or June, a source close to the couple told the Washington Post. Details about the conception have not been disclosed. The couple moved from Colorado to Virginia a year ago to be closer to Cheney's family. In November, Virginia voters passed a state constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriages and civil unions. State law is unclear on whether Poe will have any parental rights there.
A vice presidential spokesperson told reporters that Dick and Lynn Cheney are looking forward with eager anticipation to the arrival of their sixth grandchild. But the news has outraged right-wing conservative groups, for whom the vice president has generally been a poster boy. Carrie Gordon Earle, a spokesperson for Focus on the Family, told reporters that just because it's possible to conceive a child outside the relationship of a married mother and father doesn't mean it's best for the child. Love cannot replace a mom or a dad. But Executive Director Jeff Lutz of SoulForce, an ecumenical LGBT advocacy group, said, "We find it unconscionable that Focus on the Family has exploited this good news in order to once again ignore the social science research on same-sex parent families." The American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy, American Psychological Association, and American Academy of Pediatrics have each issued statements in support of adoption rights and legal protections for same-gender parents and their children. As far back as 2001, sociologists Judith Stacy and Timothy Biblars published a comprehensive review of the research on lesbian and gay parenting in the American Sociological Review. In an interview, Dr. Stacy concluded that there is not a single respectable social scientist conducting and publishing research in this area today who claims that gay and lesbian parents harm children. Stacy later asserted that children of same-gender parents may, in fact, have an advantage by some measures because of selection factors. It's because these are wanted children, she said. When you're looking at heterosexual parenting, you have a lot of accidental pregnancies.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 9th, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Charles Hall.
In the 1950s and 60s, a key civil rights leader was given a back seat in the movement he helped create because of his open homosexuality. But today there are whole communities where residents pride themselves on inclusivity. We'll hear both those stories later in the program, but first, between those extremes, there is the closet case. In a strange way, the closet case might be a serious candidate for 2006 Queer Person of the Year. The messy, high-profile outings of former Republican Congressman Mark Foley and evangelical pastor Ted Haggard helped crack the armor of the religious right, and that contributed to the congressional power shift that's already having an impact on U.S. domestic policy and global perspective, although to what extent remains to be seen. A report by the House Ethics Committee issued on this week's final day of Congress found no rule-breaking, but laid much blame for the Foley scandal at the feet of the Republican leadership. Foley himself reportedly remains in rehab, while a team of evangelical counselors has undertaken Haggard's so-called rigorous restoration plan. To ensure that the closet case won't be forgotten while these infamous examples remain in seclusion, Ron Romanofsky wrote a new song that he's sharing exclusively with This Way Out. Here's the worldwide radio debut of Hard Times for Closet Cases.
Hypocrisy's at an all-time high. Kiss the boys and then deny it. When they find out what you've done, which direction will you run? Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, caught in the act and falling from graces. These are hard times for closet cases. Better that they've been exposed, but that don't make a weed a rose. What does it do to our esteem to have these liars on our team? Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, engaging in compromising embraces. These are hard times for closet cases. What's the disease? What is the cure? No one agrees. No one one is sure. Time will tell them who will decide. Will they be welcome on either side? Don't care about their private lives. They're lovers, prostitutes, and wives. But I am tired of taking hits from these rich bastard hypocrites. Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, caught between a rock and other hard places. These are difficult times for closet cases.
Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, caught in the act and falling from grace. Says these are hard times, hard times.
That was Ron Romanofsky with Hard Times for Closet Cases. You can find out more about Ron's latest music, as well as his earlier hits with Paul Phillips, at RomanofskyandPhillips.com.
Baird Rustin, African-American civil rights activist, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Baird Rustin was born in Pennsylvania in 1910. As a bright young man, he felt compelled to fight injustice. In 1947, he organized the first active protest against segregation on buses in the South. By the late 50s, his expertise as a protest tactician caught the attention of Martin Luther King Jr. Together, they planned the 1963 March on Washington, a 250,000 people strong demonstration for racial equality, during which King delivered his I Have a Dream speech. The event proved pivotal to the civil rights movement. As a result of Rustin's active protests, he endured beatings and was frequently jailed. And because he made no secret of being gay, he was often denied due credit for his brilliant leadership. Clearly, in fighting for his strong convictions about civil rights, Baird Rustin freely accepted personal sacrifice. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Jed Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Viola Baskerville.
Learning to take a chance. She's a seasoned women's music icon.
He's a polished young rookie, making waves in the Big Apple. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and they are just two of a talented crop of GLBT musicians we'll present on the Audiophile 2006 Year in Review.
Coming the last week in December, here on This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Hello, my friends. I feel so happy to be
Key West, Florida is a unique locale, both geographically and socially. Perched off the southeastern tip of the continental U.S., the land residents affectionately call the Conch Republic is known for its well-integrated LGBT community. This Way Out Entertainment reporter Steve Pride vacationed there recently, if you can call it a vacation, when a reporter takes his voice recorder along, and he documented his Key West adventure through the words of the people he met there. Here's the first of Steve's two-part story.
Key West is a city and an island of the same name. It's closer to Havana than Miami, about half the distance, and not real big, only 7.4 square miles. It was where Tennessee Williams wrote A Streetcar Named Desire, and it was the first U.S. town to elect an openly gay mayor. The official motto of Key West is One Human Family, and to the people that live there, it's more than words on a bumper sticker. Recently, I spent time in Key West, and I want to introduce you to some of the people I met there. So I'll shut up now and let them talk.
My name is Carol Shaughnessy. I'm a writer and a almost 30-year Key West resident. I came down here as a naive 20-year-old Minnesota girl. I found a small town where people were friendly. The weather was gorgeous. You were accepted for who you were. And the community gave you the latitude to grow into who you wanted to be. You're judged not on externals, but on what you have to give and what kind of commitment you want to make to the community. It's much more about what's in your heart than what's in your wallet. I found that lack of pretentiousness and that straightforward friendliness to be incredible. I've been here now for almost 30 years, and I can't imagine living anywhere else.
Hi, I'm Tom Oosterhout. I've lived in Key West almost 25 years now. The 70s and 80s were a whole different thing. The Keys was the wild, wild west. This was the center of drug imports for much of America. So you had marijuana and coke flowing. You had a very open gay society because it was pre-AIDS. And I look back and that certainly was a different time and place than what we have today. Of course, with AIDS, the whole sexual revolution came to a grinding halt, and the feds cracking down on drug running and all that. The whole nature of the Keys and Key West was tamed by the late 80s and 90s. So the Key West you see today is a very tamed Key West, although it's still a wonderful place that cherishes its diversity. Although many major metropolitan cities claim huge ethnic populations, Key West, we have just about everybody represented here, but because it's a 1.5-mile by 4-mile long island, it's tiny, and we all have to work and play side by side. So if you're gay, straight, black, white, Catholic, Jew, whatever, you're working side by side with someone that's probably very different than you. I mean, they could be a gay, black, Puerto Rican. You never know here. So not only do we cherish our diversity, we live it. We make it a way of life.
When I first came to Key West in the late 70s, it was definitely not a tourist community. It was a commercial fishing community. And again, it was quite poor at that time. The gay community played an incredible part in the revitalization of Key West, buying the old beautiful Victorians, which unfortunately mostly were held together by termite spit because, as I said, it was a poor community, restoring these houses to their former glory, opening guest houses, opening businesses. The gay community played a very big and very welcome part in the creation of the Key West that visitors will see today.
My name is Neil Chamberlain. I'm a resident of Key West. I own the gay information website pistolandenema.com, the largest gay information website in Key West. I'm very fortunate in the business I run. I love it. Not many people can do what they love and make a living at it. I get to go out to the clubs, hang out with my friends, meet new people constantly. When you get into the gay and straight lines, there are many people that have been coming here since the early 80s and 90s that wanted to stay at like a male-only resort or a female-only resort. They kind of made their own segregation in a way by doing that. Even though they were welcome anywhere in Key West, they felt more comfortable in the company of just men or just women. We are a very blended community, and I think in a way it has hurt us in the fact that some people do want to come down and stay at a gay resort or go to a gay club. Technically, we have just a few gay clubs in a small area. However, all of our clubs are all welcome. But a lot of people, when they come down, they say, what gives? This is supposed to be such a gay community. Why are there only 5 gay clubs? Well, there are 5 clubs that are identified as gay, but, you know, there's another 70 that anyone can go into.
My name's Heather Carruthers, and I'm a co-owner of Pearl's Rainbow here in Key West. Pearl's Rainbow is the largest resort for women in the world. We've got 38 rooms and suites and 2 pools, 2 hot tubs, a restaurant, a poolside bar. All our rooms have private baths. We've been in existence since 2000. The property itself has been here and operating as a women's space since 1989.
Hello, I'm Gary Walker from the Equator Resort in Key West, Florida. The Equator Resort's going on its 10th year here in Key West. We have all male. I'd say the average age is anywhere between, I'd say, 35 to 45. We have 19 rooms here on site, and it has that southern hospitality. I'm a southern girl, honey.
My name is Philippe, working at Alexander's Guest House. The guest house has been open, gay, lesbian for the past 25 years. We have mostly couples, I would say, from 25 up to 75. Yeah. The 75, they've been together for like 30 years and 40 years, and they've been here for like the past 10 years, year after year. They always come back.
Jerry Tinlin, I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Oasis Coral Tree Inn and Coconut Grove. People who come down here often buy down here because they love that laid-back, easygoing lifestyle. I think one of the big attractions is that this is the end of the road. You can't go any further than Key West. That's out into the ocean, 160 miles off the mainland. Those are attractions to people who can afford to buy a second home here, which is a lot of the commerce that goes on, or buy a home here and move here.
Hi, I'm Martha Robinson. I am a full-time realtor for 20 years in Key West, Florida. We've had a wonderful ride for many, many years. We've watched everybody renovate our homes and the conch houses and in Newtown, Old Town, Midtown, and then with the hurricanes, so many of them last year. And then we had the flood for the last one, Wilma, and that kind of devastated a lot of folks. It was very, very difficult, and everything just seemed to stop. In my opinion, this adjustment has not been so horrible because it is allowing other people to buy right now. I mean, we're talking about $400,000 and $500,000 as being affordable. However, a little tiny condominium unit did just sell in the $269,000 range.
I can't imagine living anywhere else, but the cost of living is very high. And a lot of people come here with the idea of living in paradise. And it is paradise, but it's an expensive paradise. Employment is very tough down here. Or getting good employees is tough. We jokingly say anybody that shows up for work on the second day is a long-term employee. There's plenty of jobs. If you're willing to come down here and work hard, you'll do fine.
I'm not quite ready to move, but I can't wait to get back there for a visit. My thanks to Carol, Tom, Neil, Heather, Philippe, Jerry, and Martha. In part two of our visit, we'll meet a few more island folk, including the head of the Key West Rooster Rescue, a nude go-go boy who heals with his hands, and the former queen mother of Key West. More info about Key West can be found online at pistolandenema.com, and as always, there's more at prideonscreen.com. Until next time, this is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Nibbling on sponge cake, watching the sun bake, all of those tourists covered with oil.
Hello, I'm Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Lebanon, Ohio, a longtime This Way Out listener and donor. In memory of my mother, Mabel Simmons, I'm issuing a matching challenge to supporters of this volunteer-driven nonprofit operation. Please visit thiswayout.org to see how your help to keep this program on the air will now be worth twice as much. You'll also get a tax deduction if you're in the United States, and you'll find some unique holiday gifts there too. Again, please log on to thiswayout.org. We'll all be very thankful.
There's no time to lose. This offer ends December 31st. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Charles Hall, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Ron Romanofsky, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Viola Baskerville, and Steve Pride contributed program material. The Carnival Street Drum Band and Jimmy Buffett performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. Remember, your support is worth twice as much to us until the end of the year, and you can choose from some special CD thank you gifts, too. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2UUU, Nowra, New South Wales, KRUX, Las Cruces, New Mexico, WRPI, Troy, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.